everyone, and please welcome to our next episode from our Fierce Female Lifting podcast, this time in English, because we have an international friend for this episode. AJ, thanks a lot for taking your time and that we can make this great episode with you and talk about a really interesting topic. For everyone who doesn't know AJ, AJ is the coach for Melly. So you probably heard from him already in our daughter episode when we talk about everything. But please, maybe you can introduce yourself first and who you are, what you're doing, and why you're here.
Sure. So first of all, thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it. I apologize for the logistical arrangements for this podcast. We've shifted a few times. But yeah, life's been a little bit hectic over the last couple of months, as it is for all of us. But nevertheless, I'm happy to be here and hopefully we can help some people. So in terms of who I am, obviously I'm AJ, I'm 24 years old, almost 25. I have competed myself within natural bodybuilding since 2015. 2015 was my first ever show, and then competed again in 2016, 2017, and then most recently last year, during coronavirus. So I'm sure we can maybe touch on that a little bit at some point, perhaps. Besides that, like my life is bodybuilding to a degree. I very much live within it. My day, my job, I coach for a living and I love it. I would not change it for the world. And I'm so grateful to be able to do that. And in a lucky position where it's been successful for a long time. So I was actually a one-to-one PT, so I coach people in person in the gym. I did that for just under 2 years, for about 2013, 2014, and then 2015 when I actually started competing myself was when I started what was originally called just Made by Morris, Made by Morris Coaching. But then sort of funny story actually, I don't think I've ever told anyone, but I had someone like randomly DM me on Instagram saying, "You have the same logo as me, like you need to change it." And it, like, my logo previously like included Made by Morris Coaching on it. And he said, "You need to change it or like file some sort of like lawsuit." I was like, this kid, like living at home making like, you know, a little bit of money, but not much. Like it wasn't like what it is now. And I was like, oh shit, okay. Someone, basically the first person who made my logo had, it didn't do it like with any originality. So it was like a duplicate of someone else's logo. It wasn't like a big business or anything, but so I had to change it. So I changed it to what it is called now, which is Team MBM, which prioritizes coaching athletes that are natural, that are looking to get on stage at some point, most of them. Some people won't ever step on stage. I still coach them lifestyle athletes. And I do enjoy that as well, but if you ask me where the business is heading, where my real passion is, that is for competitors and for getting people on stage, either through their off seasons or through the prep itself, which has been limited over the last, you know, year. We've not done as much of that. I do miss it a lot. You know, 2019 was my busiest year of coaching people to the stage. And as much as it's very stressful at periods of time, I actually really love that pressure. And I sort of like relish within that pressurized environment. So I kind of miss that a little bit. But that's me as a coach and as an athlete as well. So I had a pretty good year in 2017. I won a junior world title. And then my goal last year as an athlete was to come back and to compete for my pro card. My goal was to win my pro card with the WNBF, so the World Natural Bodybuilding Federation. So I do compete in drug-free shows myself, and I will always do that, I believe. But I didn't quite get the WNBF card. The way you can get it in the UK is very difficult to get it. And that's the way that I always want to try and earn it, is by winning the overall title at the UK finals we have here. And so I came second in my class in that show. I got beaten by a very, very good bodybuilder. But then I did a show in Italy where you can win your pro card with the PMBA, MBA by just winning your class. You'd actually have to win the overall, which I have mixed opinions about. So like, I've not gone the whole full yard, like 9 yards of pro bodybuilding or anything like that. Cause I don't actually, like, as much as I have earn a pro card. I don't actually consider myself as a pro bodybuilder yet because I'm not the pro that I want to be. I want to be a pro within a specific federation. I want to really earn it. So, but I did earn a pro card with the RMBA, PMBA last year. And that show was brilliant. I was very, very lucky to do it. I don't know how I managed to make the matrix of events happen to get out. Italy went into full lockdown the day after I left. And their gyms were shut. Like, I was in a gym the last day you could be in a gym in Italy doing a pump session.
Crazy.
Then they shut down, and then obviously the UK went a bit backwards. And yeah, like, just very, I'm sat here very lucky to have been able to actually compete last year. But yeah, that's that really for me. Hopefully that gives you guys a little bit of an insight and also a little bit of an update as to where I'm at.
Very cool. Very cool. So since you are a successful bodybuilder yourself and also a very successful bodybuilding coach, having coached people to stage, just coaching lifestyle athletes, as you called it, the topic we want to talk about today is what it actually takes to be a successful bodybuilder. So we're really talking about competitive people now. We're not talking about like lifestyle athletes, because honestly, to be successful as a lifestyle athlete is just to enjoy what you're doing, I guess, and just being better at it. But to actually be successful as a bodybuilder in bodybuilding shows, that is what we want to talk about today. So to just go straight into the topic, the first question that we would have is, what do you think are traits that a good bodybuilder, female or male, doesn't matter right now, should have? Maybe even in regards to the last season, which happened like partly, as you know. So what do you think are just traits that they have or should have?
So I think one of the biggest things that the bodybuilders that end up doing really well have in their psyche is just they're motivated only by their goal. They're not trying to do it for anyone else. They're not trying to prove it to someone on Instagram that they can do it, or to share their journey, like purely to do that. They want to bodybuild for them, and they do it for themselves at all times. So whatever decision they make, whatever direction they head in with regards to, bless you, with regards to their training or nutrition, they choose to do that because it's on them. It's their thing. And I think that's why I always say to our first-time competitors is that the most important thing you can ever do before you look to step on stage is build that passion for training, build that passion for being aware of your diet and tracking your food, and just building a love for something that right now has not got a competitive end goal, because you're not stepping on stage to share, but you are driving that motivation for you to do it for yourself, and that love and that passion for bodybuilding grows. And then competing should only be the cherry on top of that. Reality. Whereas I think a lot of people now, the problem that occurs is that they actually go down the route of competing to try and like build the passion or build the love for it. And they've done that before. They've even fallen in love with weight training. So when the sessions get hard and the calories get low, the discipline falls off, and then they relate competing to bodybuilding. Like, bodybuilding is not just stepping on stage. Bodybuilding enjoying adding muscle, it's enjoying tracking food, it's enjoying being aware of like whatever is moving. It's bodybuilding, you know. It doesn't have to be competing with bodybuilding, and that's why not everyone will get on stage, and not everyone loves getting on stage, and that's totally fine. You can still bodybuild and enjoy the process without having to get on stage. But yeah, so the people, like I've said, you know, the people do well is that they build that passion, they built that love, and then they try competing the first time they do it, and they absolutely love it. And then that love and the passion for competing and bodybuilding and the sort of the general sort of things that they do day to day, they all add up. And then that means that when they actually prep, they're not focusing on, oh, I'm tired, or you know, I'm hungry, or this session's really difficult, because they actually just end up liking that. You know, yes, we all have our bad days and our bad weeks or whatever and our struggles, but most of the part, they actually just love that process. So I think being in love with the process is a big, big trait that people need. I think, you know, alongside that, that kind of leads nicely into the fact that people are very mentally resilient, that end up doing well, but in the right way. Because a lot of people think that mental resilience is like being extremely tough to the point where they can just do anything, and whatever their coach gives them, oh, I can do more, I can do this, I can do more steps, I can do more cardio. give me less food. And that's mental resilience in a way, but it's also like that stupidity. Like you need a balance of mental resilience and application of that mental resilience. So the combination factor there will allow for success because they listen to the coach, they apply themselves, they don't do anything different and they tick their boxes. But when it gets tough, they dig in the right way. So they dig into the plan. They don't dig into just wanting to bury themselves and, you know, end up losing muscle and dieting off way more body fat than they need to for a class or whatever. You know, like this is just a process in which they need to listen and be mentally resilient at the same time. So that's what I would say on the front of sort of like traits. Those two are the biggest ones that stand out for me. Beyond that, I think they've got to have some degree of like a little bit of competitive background, because this is the final one that I'll cover. So like competitive background is a byproduct of like knowing that when you're entering a bodybuilding show and you want to win, you're not competing against yourself anymore. Like, so as much as you will see the captions out there that say, you know, say it is me versus me, it is in your own bodybuilding journey. But on stage, it's not you versus you. Like, you've got to beat 7, 8, 9, 10 other people. And those are the people have their own boxes to tick. And your job as an athlete is to try and find ways in which you can tick more than them, or you can be more consistent than them, or you can find a little way to beat these people. You might not even know who you're competing against. So a lot of the time you're just imagining that you're ticking a box that someone else isn't. But the ability to think like that will make you probably beat people that aren't ticking some boxes. So that competitive nature and drive and the understanding that you're not just stepping on stage against you is important as well.
Have you found that when people are as competitive as you describe it now, that they also like tend to compare themselves with other people as well? Like, for example, I know it from my own experience that, of course, I know I'm not going to be standing on stage alone. And sometimes I fall into this mental space where I start comparing myself with those people. What do you do then? Or what do you tell clients who do that? Because I think it happens a lot.
Sure. So it's difficult for sure, especially when you get someone that's very, very good and you're comparing yourself to someone that's extremely good, because you'll always find weak points and issues and you'll talk yourself into the fact that you won't beat them. And I know for a fact that, like, I won't say names because obviously it's a little bit harsh because they might not want it to be said on a podcast. I doubt they'll listen to it anyway, but I know world champion pro bodybuilders that message me, message other people and send physiques and say, I'm never going to beat him, or I'm not as good as him, and get in their own heads. So it happens when you're even the absolute best at what you do. So even when you've beaten everyone, even when you're literally a professional natural pro that has won professional natural pro shows, and you'll talk yourself out of maybe even competing. But I think the reality is, you know, you're the only one that can start to instill that confidence and that drive in yourself. And you've got to manage to flip that switch. Because unfortunately, if you're going to the gym in a prep and you're thinking you're going to be beaten, or there's someone out there that's already beating you in your head, you've lost. You've just lost straight away. Mm-hmm. It's like in business, like, if you're looking at someone else's coaching business and you're like, oh, they're so far ahead, they're always going to be ahead of me. They know more. They've got more clients. They've got a fancy looking website. I'm never going to be able to catch them up. Well, you've lost again. You're just never going to be able to be on that level because you've just already said to yourself that you're worse and you're always going to be worse. I think being driven by other people, like, you know, again, to relate it to a coaching business or to a physique, you can be motivated by that. And like, as long as looking at that online or social media, whatever, or comparing yourself, as long as it drives you, then that's a positive influence and that's perfect. And you should have that. And because I use that a lot, like, I look up to a lot of people and I not want to be like them, but like, I find things that they do and I try and emulate some of their things because it's working, you know, it's like proof's in the pudding kind of thing. And, that's motivating for me. Like a fine example is Chris McCready, seeing him pull like 280 kilos for like 6, 7, 8 reps. Like I look at that and I'm like, I want to do that too. I don't think, oh, I'm way behind, you know, I'm like 40 kilos off. I think, okay, well, first of all, I think my top set is now a warm up for him. So it makes my top sets feel like less overwhelming. And then I use that as a positive tool, not as a tool like looking at my top set and thinking it's shit. I'm thinking, no, like this is light right now. I can get to that. I have that in the future. Right now, I still need to focus and attention on this set, but I've got the progressional ability. So as long as, you know, that comparison allows you to level up, then it's all good.
I think it's always hard when you compare yourself to other people. It's like, of course, it's like people that are way ahead of you. Like, as you said, it's like a guy lifting such so much more weight than you. It's just like, okay, if he can do it, I know that someday I can do it too. Yes. But it's really hard when I have like people pretty much on the same level. And I when you start comparing yourself to them, I think that's the moment where it sometimes gets really tricky to not always compare ourselves. Okay, I have to be better. I have to be better. What do I have to do to be better than this person? And I think that's sometimes really hard to find the right balance.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that.
You said also about like you have to just keep focusing on ticking your boxes. What does this exactly mean for you, ticking boxes? I know like many coaches in bodybuilding always say that, okay, you have to just keep ticking boxes and focus on like every day just on those things and not like how far have you progressed. But for example, like when you start doing a prep, especially natural bodybuilding is like 6 to 7, 8, 9 months, yeah? Of course, in the end, you have to be really, really strict and have to make sure that you really stay on track and do everything you have to do. But in the beginning, how strict do you have to be? Like, what does exactly mean ticking boxes? Do I have to sleep every day my eight and a half hours? Or is it okay if I sleep 1 day 7 and 1 day 9 if it just suits my daily schedule better? You know what I mean?
Sure, I think there's levels to ticking boxes, certainly. And of course, there's levels across different phases as well. So like, I'd be lying if I said that I had the exact same accuracy that I have 1 week out from a show year round. Mm. Because it's just that isn't actually needed towards the goal. Like, I think the best thing that you can sort of say when it comes to ticking boxes is that as long as you're ticking the relevant boxes for the phase, and that actually means that also you relax yourself a little bit in phases where you don't need to tick so many meticulous boxes. For example, weighing your green beans out to the gram. Do you need to do that 54 weeks deep into the off season? No. Is that an added stress? Perhaps. Yes. If it makes you feel good about yourself and it makes you feel less stressed, then fair play, do it. But I don't know many people out there that actually feel less stressed doing things like that, because I think that actually just increases overall emotional and almost physical stress as well, just by being like in that poorer situation with food focus and with just general sort of monotony of stuff. You need to have that balance of flicking the switch with the ticking the boxes as well, you know, like when you need to go into a fat loss phase and you've got your step goal that you absolutely need to hit, you get out there and you do your steps whatever the way that, you know, like right now I haven't really got a step goal. I go on the same walk every day, but that's just because it's part of my routine. But if I'm like on the same, I had a step goal right now, it was 10,000 and I was on 9,200 and it was like 8 p.m. I was just about to sit down and watch a movie and go to bed. I'm gonna get way more benefit out of just sitting down, watching a movie, chilling out 700 steps under, then going outside, getting a coat on, getting soaked and freezing, taking away from my time period to relax, to tick that box. And it's a fine balance, because equally you could argue if that's more beneficial to relax and chill, then why don't you just do that the whole prep? But that's not the point. You know, the point is if I was 700 under on a step goal and it was a day of fat loss where steps are really important, I'd go and get them because fat loss is important and I need to expend calories. But equally, I wouldn't just go and get them and say, okay, right, I'm out doing steps. I'd actually reverse engineer that and think, why the hell am I out doing steps and I should be at my scheduled bedtime or my scheduled relax time, which then just leads me in saying that the box ticking element is not just within, like, okay, steps, cardio, food, training. It's your routine as well. So it's when you wake up, like, I think, right, so right now with work, I can't get my work done in the time period that I want to get it done if I don't wake up at 5 a.m. Because I really like getting my work done before I go and train, like most of it, because I don't like the idea of, and I used to do it where, you know, like I'd wake up at 9, get plenty of sleep, I'd go to bed quite late, I'd wake up at 9, do a few check-ins before I'd train, I'd come back, and then I do more work, and I'd always have that on my shoulder, like feeling of like doing check-ins after training, like the pressure of it and wondering whether I was going to be able to be alert enough to give good feedback and things like that. So I now know that my non-negotiable box ticking has to be getting up at 5, because I want to get my routine off to a good start, and I want to get my day done of work before I go and invest in myself. So if I didn't do that, then that just cascades into my whole day, and my boxes start to become less and less ticked. I don't get my work done before I train, and then I might train later, and then I might go to bed later. It's all just like a horrible domino effect. So box ticking is about mainly your structure, and once you box tick your structure, everything else should fall into place. That's what I would say.
Okay. So you would say that with that discipline or with that box ticking that is needed, there are different levels. So as you get closer to a show, you would be obviously more strict with your steps, with your sleep, with your meal timing, everything that there is to tick. But would you say that there is like too much discipline where you could, as you said, maybe be like too strict with something and that would go wrong, even if it is in a prep where maybe it would be too much emotional stress or something?
Yeah, for sure. I think go both ways. And this is just something that you need to be very in tune with yourself and also honest with your coach. Like if you feel at any point there is something that you're overanalyzing or just, it's just not allowing you to stay as relaxed as you need to be to impact things like, you know, your day-to-day readiness, your day-to-day energy. Like if you're just overthinking something, that's because I think one thing that competitors don't understand enough or overlook is emotional stress. It's a crazy draining thing. And to relate it to something that we're all going through right now, everyone right now is probably at a point of high emotional stress. Everyone.
Like,
categorically. And so if you're feeling more tired like day to day right now, that is very, very normal, because what people don't understand is that, you know, emotional stress is just like physical stress. So you go to the gym and you train with weights and you think, oh, that's tiring. Okay, I should be okay to feel tired the next day. But like emotional stress can make you feel tired all the time if you're constantly heightened emotional stress, even if you're resting from training. So like last 4 days, I didn't train. I took a 4-day deload. But at the end of the 4 days, I still felt wrecked. I still felt tired. I felt even more tired, you know. Like the reason being is because I have a lot of emotional stress going on with getting people sorted, with home training, and also just making sure that all my clients are feeling good, because it's a worrying time, you know, and I actually feel for my clients a lot. So emotional stress is something that people definitely overlook, and needs to be monitored. That's for sure. Yeah. Mm. Just being honest, I think, is key.
Okay. Would you also say that even taking emotional stress into account, it is necessary to be strict, to be disciplined. It is necessary to be stricter as a prep goes on, for example. Would you say that there is such a thing as balance in bodybuilding? Like, or is it even needed? Or what is your take on that?
Yeah, good question. It's certainly needed in specific phases. Like when you are in a phase where you can be a little bit more relaxed Don't get me wrong, again, routine, consistency, structure is very, very key when you are a bodybuilder. And, you know, yes, you could argue that the less balance you have, maybe the more you're able to focus on your bodybuilding processes and maybe you're able to make better progress than some others. But I'd argue that, again, the balance that you can create allows for less stress, and the less stress allows you to progress more as a bodybuilder. So balance is key. Balance is certainly key in the phases in which we can actually achieve it. Equally, being at a point where you can understand that even despite having like a slightly poor balance setup, like for example, the very end of a prep, you can still tick your boxes and you can still relax and you can still sort of like be very sort of focused on the end goal in the means that like when you get to that show, you can return to being a little bit more balanced at the same time. So yeah, for sure, I'd say it's a massively important thing. Because if you're unbalanced, you're very unbalanced for a long period of time, what happens inevitably, and this is why a lot of people never compete again, is they hate it. And if they don't like their life, they don't like their lifestyle, they're not going to want to be doing it for much longer within bodybuilding. Equally, it floods into like your home life as well. Especially if you live with your parents, or your parents have a huge part in your life and you see them frequently, they're going to ask you like, why do you do what you do? And, you know, and if you're the one weighing out your Christmas dinner and things like that, you know, they're going to be aware of that. If there's no balancing act to the processes that you have around your family aren't going to support bodybuilding. Which is, or they're just going to be very confused by it. Like very, very confused by it. And I'm sure like probably Loz won't mind me saying this, but so like Loz last Christmas didn't realize that, you know, you could like just have Christmas food and not really track it like to the gram. But then the Christmas, like, so this Christmas we went to families and she would eat like in a relaxed way. And the change in which she saw, and she even said to me with her family in the way that they were so happy about that, it's crazy. But then that resulted in asking more questions about bodybuilding and them actually learning more, because previously it was just like, why the hell are you doing that? You know, it's like a dead end conversation. But now it's like an open conversation because they realize, oh, okay, there's a bit of an on and off button for this, which actually I think more people don't realize it's there. You know, they don't realize that they can switch that off button a little bit when it's needed. Even like IFBB pros, high level professional athletes will have off buttons. They're not always on, and that's important.
Now I lost my thought.
Okay, I'm just gonna resume. Okay, go ahead.
I always wonder, do you think it's actually possible? I mean, okay, it's like if you want to go on stage, I think it's always possible to make your way through. But if you want to be really successful on a long-term basis as a bodybuilder, is it possible when you have a 9-to-5 job?
Yeah, I'd say it is. I just think that it's certainly harder in a way, because you cannot ever manipulate your routine around like your bodybuilding as much as I can. So when you're stuck in that structure, you must have to do your cardio in the morning and your weights at night, and you can never change that. So, but if, let's say, so for example, you know, when I went away, I could change my whole routine and then I could get back and I saw some elements of that routine that I really liked. I just immediately put them into this routine here. So I think with a 9-to-5 job, you can certainly bodybuild. It's harder. And a lot of people with a 9-to-5 will look at what we do as coaches and they'll think, oh my God, like I wish I could do that. But then they're also the same person that might not want to wake up as early as some coaches do, or they might not want to work as late as some other coaches do. So equally with a coach, you've got to be willing to work, you know, whether it's a PT, whether it's an online coach, you've got to be willing to work like pretty strange hours sometimes. And that's just something you've got to get used to. So I think that's, you know, like when you're busy with any work, you know, you're always going to have quite a few working hours. It's just up to you as to how you distribute them. And again, as a 9-5, if you've got a 9-5 in a different industry, it might actually be a benefit because it takes your mind off bodybuilding sometimes. I feel like being a coach is sometimes quite overwhelming because your whole day is spent thinking about training, nutrition, bodybuilding. And as much as I love it and I wouldn't have it any other way, I would like to see how I felt if I didn't have it and just compare, you know? But that's not possible because I'll never give it up.
Actually a topic I found really interesting because you were prepping last year and you were prepping yourself. Like you didn't, obviously you had other people's opinions, but you prepped yourself, but still made your like decisions for your athletes and the people you were prepping. Like, how did you do it? I couldn't do it, honestly. Like, how did you manage that?
It's hard. It's hard. And I actually think when I reverse engineer the prep, and I think back, I had like really, really good direction and I had like eyes on me. But yeah, you're right. I did make the decisions myself when I made a food change or when I made a cardio adjustment or, well, not cardio, when I made a step adjustment, I would, sorry to rub that in, but I just did it all myself. So I look back and I think actually, you know, came to the end of the prep and I said to myself, what could have gone better? My biggest thing that could have gone better was the UK show. And the reason why that didn't go the way that I wanted to is that I actually disattached myself from my own progress photos. And that stage, like the people I was sending them to, yes, they had my best interests at heart, but they weren't my coach. Like neither of them were my coach, like Huber and Ben. They weren't coaching me. So like they would just tell me, like, I think the encouraging things that I needed to hear at that stage. And because the lighting was changing, and we weren't being crazy critical because we knew I looked good 7 days prior, we overlooked some of the things that were actually going wrong. And the fact that, you know, I was getting quite flat and quite stringy from flushing a lot of fluid. And I didn't pick up on that until afterwards. And I missed the mark there by quite a bit. And that was really frustrating because the reason why I was actually so upset at that show was because it wasn't because I came second. I can handle coming second. It's fine. As much as it annoys me, I can handle it. But I can't handle not looking my best on stage, like not looking where I should be looking. And I know everyone always says that, like they come second, they're like, oh, I could have looked better or whatever. But the pictures are there, you know, like I really didn't look my best at that one. And there were reasons for it. And, you know, like even the scale weight, like I was 3.5 pounds heavier at the Italian show than I was at the UK show because it was just all fluid replenishment and food volume. I was very, very like, very dry, but loads of like fluid had been pulled from an intramuscular space. So yeah, that was a point where I thought, right, I actually think I do need someone to just tell me what to do. So I haven't really talked to many people about it, but I do think when I next prep, I will actually be hiring a coach. So I'm pretty confident as to where I would go in terms of coaching because there's like really only one person I really think I want to learn from at this stage in my coaching career. And I want like someone, basically I want someone who's had eyes on professional level natural athletes for a long time. So for that reason, if I am going to go down the coaching route, it probably would be with Cliff, because Cliff Lawson, if anyone doesn't know, the reason being is because I want him, like his eyes, to tell me where I'm at in terms of comparison to some of the best he's ever worked with, you know. So if I was to work with someone, it would probably would be himself, but I'd still use my second eyes as opinions. I'd still, you know, I'd still obviously send my photos to Cuba. I still do now, you know, But yeah, I think that's where I would go next, and probably a solution to my problem of putting the clients over myself in a prep window, like a peak week, which is an issue. Because that'll always be the case, I think. Like I'll always make sure that my team look the best, but then I forget that I've actually got to step on stage myself and do the job. So, and I didn't have anyone competing the week after. In the Italy show, there was no peak weeks. It was just me. So I was like looking at myself a lot more critically. But I think as my business grows, I'm never going to have a show now, I don't think, where unless I do another IMBA show, I'm never going to have a show where I'm the only one competing. Mm. It's always going to be, there's always going to be someone else doing a UK DFBA show. There's always going to be someone else competing in another country or whatever. So I would rather just literally check in, be told what to do, do it. And then if it goes wrong, it goes wrong. We learn from it. And I see myself as having, you know, loads of years of competing left. So if I make a few mistakes, cool, that's fine. But if I work with a coach for a couple of years, 2 years, 3 years, then at least you can make them together and then get it right. So it's a heavy consideration one, actually. So it's cool that you raised that topic.
Mm. Yeah, when we look at world athlete bodybuilders, I mean, they all have coaches. Like the least, right. Like there's not many people in the top level that coach themselves or prep themselves even, because I think at this point, I mean, I haven't prepped anyone else. I haven't prepped myself, but I can just imagine that it's really hard to focus on yourself when you have other people to focus on as well. So
right.
I can imagine that. Talking about the elite or like the world pros, what would you say, what separates in terms of traits, in terms of maybe habits, in terms of like what they do in their day-to-day life, what separates the elite and the ones that really get to the top from the rest? Like how do they get there?
Sure. So I think the elite always have that sort of initial mindset that we talked about at the start. They have a very, very good competitive drive and they want to be the best. They always want to be the best. They want to outwork people. They want to outsmart people. They want to have the best coaches. Like that's the elite mentality. I mean, it's hard to avoid the fact that, you know, you can obviously have an elite mentality, but in bodybuilding, you're going to face it. Like if you don't have relatively decent genetics, getting to the elite is a more difficult task. And you can't ignore that. Like, you can certainly work extremely hard over a long time period, many years. You can still not quite make it there because you have not got some of the you know, the genetic makeup that some other people do have. I find that, so you get a balance of the two at the top, really. You get people that are very much like, you know, I mean, you only have to take one look through their Instagram, scroll through and just see their training. You're like, okay, you're riding on the genetic card, or they're just not showing good training. It's either one or the other. And then you get other people where you scroll through and you're like, right, okay, fair play. Like Chris is a great example, Chris McCready. Like he's not riding on genetics. He's riding on absolute grit and like just all out with everything. It's all out in his off season. He's all out in his prep. And that level of I want it is pretty crazy. And that's kind of what you need to get that kind of progress. So they're, you know, elite people are very, you know, without the genetic side, elite people are very, very meticulous in their off seasons. They don't let something go astray when it comes to nutritional setup, sleep, stress management. They try and stay on top of all of those variables as much as they can. They want it in the gym all the time for the most part, but they're also able to, you know, understand that not every session will be ridiculously progressive or amazing. They'll have shit sessions, but they're able to actually say, okay, today was a bit shit. Like, let's move on. Let's be better next time. You know, they're acceptance of that and they're cool with it. To an extent, I think we all get annoyed. I mean, I'd say I'm cool with sessions that go well. I'm not, but you know, like I'm able to wake up the next day and be like, right, fresh start. And yeah, I think, you know, the way they carry themselves as well, like elite athletes, like you should be able to carry yourself professionally if you want to be at the top. Like we're in a day and age now where you are, if you are professional at what you do and you have that sort of like elite sort of, you know, hierarchy, you should be able to represent that online a little bit. And I think a lot of people want to be professionals or want to be elite at a sport and they don't represent that online, you know, like with the way that they carry themselves professionally. Like, yeah, you can have a laugh and have a bit of banter online and stuff like that. But especially like if you want to be an elite coach, like that's something that I've tried to audit with my content production, my stories, everything. Like, you know, don't get me wrong, I want to be like a, you know, I want to be the 24-year-old, like jokey kind of guy that I am. And I want to show like a bit of my sarcasm and jokes and things like that now and again. But at the end of the day, I want to be an elite coach. I want to be someone that looks up, like they look up to me and think, okay, it's professional. So you've got to audit the way that you act as well. You know, not extensively to the point where you live a boring life, but you know, to the point where you are mostly professional online, especially, you know, when you start getting into sponsorships and you know, collaborations and things like that. Like at the end of the day, I'm sponsored by like 3-4 companies now. So I've got to be careful with what I say and what I do. And I've got to present myself like the elite athlete that I want to be. So yeah, that applies to sort of like modern day bodybuilding more than anything else. It's just like the social media side of things, but it is important to note. So yeah, those I think are some of my biggest ones.
I feel like so many pro bodybuilders at this point are actually living from social media and their sponsorships, to be honest, because most, like as we talked about before, like a 9-to-5 job is just so hard to have when you're on this level of bodybuilding. And I feel like that just ties in so nicely. Like you can, obviously it looks good, so you can get like big on Instagram because people like to look at your stuff, and you just get the sponsorships and everything. So I think that ties in together really nicely.
Agreed.
One last question actually that we would have, in terms of the traits, like the habits, we talked about that, all that stuff, but what about the environment side of things? Because I mean, Petra and I, we both go to dust gym, like we know how important your environment is, but to be successful in bodybuilding, what is your take on that? Like how big would you, or how much of a role does the environment play that you have, or could you train in your garage gym and still be a very successful bodybuilder maybe?
Yeah, I think it plays a huge role, to be honest. And again, it's not just within the kit selection and, you know, the environment that we all have, all three of us, when gyms are open and we can actually get inside them. You know, we all are very blessed on that front. I think you can still make a, you know, an elite level physique with a subpar environment if you're wanting your desire for the goal is big enough. You know, as long as you have, you know, adequate kit, you know, okay kit, and you're, you know, even if you're mainly working with barbells, dumbbells, but you have, you know, decent machines for like leg extensions, leg curls, etc. If you have that, I think you can get pretty far. Especially with social media nowadays, like you can use that as a really positive tool for motivation. You can look at what other people are doing with dumbbells and barbells a lot easier than you can look. Like I can't look at, you know, some of your guys' training clips when you're in the gym and look at what you're doing on the hack, because I haven't got a hack that's the same as yours. I haven't got the no bullshit shoulder press. I haven't got the comparison to those lifts. So when you've got a dumbbell and a barbell, it's a lot easier to look online and sort of be driven and be motivated by what other people are doing. So I think actually in some environments, like you can, you know, make potentially more progress because people are going to our environments and get perplexed by the amount of different kit. So they're actually overwhelmed and then they don't end up sticking to a program because they're just too busy trying the new different machines. So it can go both ways, to be honest. But in terms of motivation and environment from a sort of a perspective of like, you know, the people that are in the gym, that I think takes you to like the next level really. Like when I train at Ultra and there's like, you know, five different IFBB pros in there, it's a pretty cool environment to be training in. You know, you can't argue that. You know, if I was in a garage versus that, I think I'd take, you know, take the ultra environment myself. So yeah, it makes a big difference, but it's not something that you can't work around.
Looking at the current situation, maybe as a little takeaway message for our listeners, we all can't go into gyms right now. Our listeners can't go into a gym right now and train, not into Dust Gym, not into any other gym. What would you say, what are things that they can focus on, or like how can they create an environment for themselves at home, maybe even if the equipment isn't the best, that still keeps them focused on your goals? Like how can you do the most for your bodybuilding career, or maybe if you're a lifestyle athlete right now in this situation that we're in? I think that would be a really valuable thing to give to our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think every day within your environment, wherever it is, whether it's in, you know, the home or the garage, or you've got access to a facility or whatever, you've just got to be continually driven by your why. You know, your why has to be extremely strong at the stage. Whatever you're chasing, you know, I have some lifestyle clients at the moment that their why is, you know, they want to lose 50 pounds of body weight. They have to, because they need to get into better shape, and it's for the health. And that why just needs to be instilled within their psyche sort of every single day, really. And realize that as much as the stepping stones maybe aren't as large as we want to make, so like stepping stones in the gym, you might get more progressions out of using kit that, you know, offers you a better profile for that specific muscle group you're trying to train. You know, and you might feel better on joints, tendons, ligaments, whatever. You might be able to, you might be restricted in terms of the amount of frequency you can get at the moment, something like that. But even though those stepping stones are maybe smaller, they're still stepping stones. So if you choose to take a forward step, like literally today or tomorrow, then that's setting you up for, you know, actually making the most out of this time period, rather than choosing the option of, well, one, staying stagnant, or alternatively, which is likely if you don't train at all, you will just continue taking stepping stones backwards. So you've got really two options, like regardless of your kit selection, whether it's the best, the worst, or right in the middle, you can step forwards or you can just step backwards, and that's literally it. So I think this time period will also show who is the most disciplined, who has the most discipline, because we're not riding on massively high motivation at the moment. You know, motivation is like a fluctuating variable. It comes up and down, but discipline can stay static if you really, really want it hard enough. So yeah, I mean, you can't lie. Like, you're not going to wake up and be like jumping out of bed motivated right now, because just the world's not like that place to live in, especially with bodybuilding. But, you know, you're still be able to create some aspect of your day which you can look forward to, and then just create with whatever training setup you have, create some attractive training sessions that you actually look like you're looking forward to do. Yeah, I think the attractiveness of training right now needs to be heavily considered. So whatever you're doing at home, make it as attractive as it possibly can be, because otherwise you'll just do everything you can to avoid it. So that's what I would say right now.
Yeah, that's the most important thing as well, yeah. I would say. So thank you for that. Petra, do you have any other question, anything else that you would like to know or to say?
Maybe it's just a real short question. It's like, how many clients are going on stage 2021 from you?
Ooh, okay. So I don't really know like a confirmed number, because I can imagine when the show dates get released and we get a more clear picture as to whether we're going to have the similar setup to 2020. So like an open British final and no qualifiers, that's when more people will make their decisions. Mm-hmm. And then I can say, okay, I would like to do this, or I would like to leave it this year. But if everyone competes, I think about 8, which still isn't that much, to be honest, because a lot of the people that I had that were going to compete this year, put it off last year. They already said, I need 2021 to like go on holiday, to like rekindle bloody relationships with their family. You know, like a lot of them haven't seen their family in like ages. And you know, when you prep and you like are so hyper focused on that goal, you sort of lock yourself into your own little lockdown sometimes, you know, and then if you don't create the time for that, you realize you've just spent 2 years away from family and maybe even locked away some friendships that then you can't actually rekindle. And like, you know, they're actually lost a little bit and you come out of routine with some of those aspects of your life. And, you know, is that as much as that sucks, that is actually the reality for a lot of people. So yeah, we have to be very careful with that. And I've really like queried clients on that front. I've been like, okay, how long has it been since you've gone on holiday? Do you really want to go on holiday? Is it important for your relationship like that to go away and have time away? Have you seen your family? Do you plan on seeing, you know, your family consistently? And, you know, I've just been asking more questions really to sort of like confirm whether it's the right idea or not. Because like, I know what I'm like when I prep, like, especially towards the end, it's very much hyper-focused towards the goal. And, you know, I make time for other people. I, of course, I make time for other people, my clients and stuff. But for me specifically, it's like, it's you know, the 3.5-4-hour journey to go down and see my dad, for example, starts to become less attractive as I get leaner and leaner and leaner, which sounds horrible, but it's true. It's just a matter of like, you know, your time management is distributed a little less balanced towards that dog end of prep. So we will see. But regardless, I just hope for a year where we can actually, I really, really just really hope that I can just go and watch shows. I just really hope that I can do that. God knows. I mean, it doesn't look positive, but we'll see. I mean, I'm used to live streams now. I've probably spent the best part of £500 on like live streams this year, last year for bodybuilding. So, yeah, we'll see. All right.
Cool. So 2022 is going to be a crazy year for you as a coach then.
2022, I think if I plan on competing, I absolutely need a coach.
I think so.
There's no way on God's earth I would be able to get
the through figure that. Setup alone is gonna be crazy, or the figure lineup. Like, we're a lot of figure athletes in 2022.
yeah, it will be crazy. Like, I just, again, like that year I have to be able to get to shows. I'm not having that many people step on stage and not being able to see it. I need to see that year happen. So, yeah. But, yeah.
I think we all do.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. If people maybe want to reach out to you, I don't know if you have coaching spaces left, but still reach out to you maybe for coaching or maybe an online physique assessment. I think you still do those. So if they want to reach out to you, how can they find you or where can they find you?
Sure. So best place to contact me in terms of just like a quick message is actually email at the moment. So like if you want to like inquire for coaching or the physique assessment or just a general like longer form question, aj@madebymorriscoaching.com. And equally check out my log at Train by JP. That's where I like update daily on what I'm doing. And also like any questions that come through on there, I will really get back to in quite a lot of depth. Obviously like follow me on Instagram. DMs wise, I'm not the best with, I must admit. Like, I answer all of the ones that come into the main box, but the hidden box is full, and I probably won't be able to get back to all of those. That's why I say, if you've got a question, email me, because that box is just, Instagram's just really annoying with that box. I wish it just put it all in one place. But yeah, I'm on there. I post as frequently as I can. I must admit my cognition for posts is just not as good at the moment. I'm not sure why. Like, I just think there's so much out there at the moment that's the same and that people are posting about lockdown, and I'm trying to find gaps in the content and like trying to wiggle my way through it and trying to find something to post that helps people, that doesn't just fit the algorithm. But I'm on there. I could talk all day about Instagram and stuff, but we'll leave it. yeah, I think that's about it for me, to be honest. So thank you very much for having me on there, guys. I've actually really enjoyed it. I've missed doing podcasts.
Thank you for coming on. Just one more thing. If you listeners out there liked this episode, then please take a screenshot now, and we all have to do a flex now, AJ. You have to do one too. Yes. Put it on your Instagram stories and tag us with, I think it's AJ Morris _, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Score right there. Yeah. Petra underline Pretty and at Melanie Mut, you know what to do. Other than that, thank you, AJ, again for coming on. We had a fantastic time with you, and we wish you a great rest of your day as well to our listeners. Have a fantastic day, a fantastic night, whatever, whenever you're listening this to, and we will talk to you soon.
Yes.
Bye.